Hello and welcome to another. I'm not going to say special, but this is going to be a particularly remarkable episode of the Offside Musings podcast. My name is Oke Ndibe, and it's my delight to welcome you on behalf of my co-host, Emeka Onyeagwa. Today, we're going to look at a number of events, and this is sort of a pre-Christmas episode for us. And so it's an opportunity for us to X-ray the situation, social, economic situation in Nigeria as we approach Christmas. As I said, it's a remarkable episode, and when you listen, you're going to find out why we say that it's remarkable. That's the best that I want to the best way that I want to introduce this. So, Emeka, it's a delight to have you again on this special, remarkable pre-Christmas edition.
A couple next couple weekend after Christmas.
Yes.
Thank you. Financial scheme generally, although I think it's here in America too. Everything about same thing in Nigeria. It's just like my friend reminded me, at least in America, you can find a way of it's easier to find a way of making income,
Yes.
making some income, right? It is in Nigeria.
Yeah. So I tell you something because, you and I were talking about this episode before we got on. It's a remarkable episode because I can't say it's an exciting one. It's a somber one. That's the way to put it. It's somber because a few episodes ago we focused on the price of rice in Nigeria. The fact that when I was in Nigeria in March, the price of rice was 10,000 naira. I returned in October, and in parts of the country, the price of rice was approaching 60,000 naira. Emeka, as you suggested, there's of course such price, what Americans call inflationary trends, but usually it's that Americans are paying another 10 cents more than they were used to pay in 10, maybe 20 cents for a dozen eggs. See, we never quite experienced in America anything on this scale where a price jumps six times, so from 10,000 to or four times, five times or something, from 10,000 to close to 60,000. But I was just speaking with a relative yesterday, as a matter of fact, and this relative told me that as a rule, every Christmas that he gives money to about 50 less fortunate families that he supports, but that these most of the beneficiaries of his largesse do not have bank accounts. In other words, they are too poor to have bank accounts, and that he is unable to get more than 2,000, 5,000 naira from the bank. That to get 10,000 naira from a bank, often you need to know the bank manager, or you need to greet somebody's palm in order to get that sort of thing. So I don't know. This is as we are closing up on Christmas, I think that this is a particularly dangerous trend. When you couple the exploding prices of commodities, especially rice, and Nigerians are ricists, I call it. Nigerians are fanatical about rice. That you combine the exploding prices of rice with the fact that people can't even, the vast majority of Nigerians who don't have access to banks and therefore cannot do money transfers, are not going to be able to receive the help from the well-to-do enough to have a semblance of a festive Christmas. So I don't know how what kind of picture you are getting from your contacts in Nigeria and how you see the consequences of this situation.
It's bad. It's worse since the end of summer. I was there. It's bad. Everybody's on edge. These are quote unquote the elites, right? On edge. They're all on edge. They're all worried and all these kind of things. And they still didn't care. I was reading a report in Sahara Report yesterday that about the head of the army's Nigerian logistics has just purchased a $1 million property in Florida. I'm not sure the exact state. But he just purchased one with all the documentation for all that. So, you know, the guys, and so clearly he's doing it. They said that not only property, he has almost a property portfolio in America, close to 10 million. So, I mean, clearly his family is obviously here. So he doesn't, like, that's been the trend for a long time. He doesn't want to live in Nigeria. That's pretty clear. And in this situation, as things are going and as things are in Nigeria, it's a situation all across the board. Views that no matter the eye, no matter the side of the political divide, you may or may not be on. And I say political divide, I think Nigeria has changed the world. Major political divide, I think, is a disservice to the world. There's just ethnic divides largely. Maybe a few political divides, but largely so.
Ethnic and religious, but mostly ethnic.
Yeah, so, another idea on everybody's people are suffering, and you can see from people's reactions what's happening. I get every couple of hours, you get somebody trying to reach this, reach me to assist in their current predicament, which, you know, even for the most part, it's always just these level things. I've needed. Family has needed. Kids has needed. Kind of thing. It's very, it's always about a lack of humanity. There's such a word. You say dehumanization. So you have become less than a human being. You have become. The essence of a human being is to exist. Some would say the essence is to exist and live, maybe on a deeper philosophical level, but just the essence of somebody just at least existing doesn't even seem to be there. Like you're less than existing. It's very sad to see.
Yeah,
it's very sad to see from people. People one has met and kept in contact with. It's sad to see. It's sad to see it getting a lot worse. And again, I'm not talking about the elites in this case. People have houses and multiple houses and all these kind of things. I was complaining the most.
As you said, you know, you are just talking about mere resistance. You know, it used to be that you could say that there was very little to life in Nigeria, but what we see now is that, as you rightly said, people are dehumanized. And some years ago, I used the term that people are animalized. You know, that human beings in Nigeria are compelled to live at a very rudimentary nature imposed level of animals. You know, people defecate wherever they can. People now scavenge in rubbish heaps where people have thrown away rotten foods, and people go there, and that's where they find their gourmet meals and where they find their treasures. People die. You know, I was just in Toronto last weekend to give a talk there, and I met a Nigerian guy who told me that I gave a talk and he was apologizing the next day that he couldn't come to my talk because that day they woke up to the news that his brother-in-law, his wife's older brother, had been killed by kidnappers. And this guy was kidnapped some months ago, traveling from Abuja to the southeast. He was kidnapped. The family and friends rallied and paid the ransom. And on another trip, again, he was driving and they stopped his car, killed him, and took his passengers into their hideout, you know? And so he said his wife was just as understandably inconsolable, so he had to be with his wife. And so I remember years ago, a few years ago, when I made a statement that Nigerians were dying like ants. You know, it's as if, you know, the same way that as we walk around every day, we of course step on ants without knowing it, we squelch them. There must be, you know, ants could tell stories. They must tell that there's this giant, mammoth giant that just stepped on their relative and crushed maybe 10 of their relatives. And so I said that Nigerians, you know, this was the heyday of Boko Haram, which will go in and plant a bomb that will kill 200 people. Then I said the government, you know, will continue. Government officials will go to parties and dance as if it is ants who had died. Unfortunately, Bishop Matthew Kuka misread me profoundly and said I was saying that Nigerians were ants. And he said, oh, because I live in America, I thought that I was no longer an ant. So, of course, misread what I said. Obviously, he and I later spoke on the phone and he apologized to his credit for that misapprehension of what I said. But what you said is absolutely right, that people are now operating at the level of animals.
It's jarring to see. I know it doesn't sound like much. I was on a very different tangent, but I was looking at I came across some Twitter pages of Black Americans using that to make fun of Nigerians, and there's a whole. It's a rabbit hole, a whole rabbit hole with the Black Americans, whether they call themselves the Eaters or the Foundational Black, whatever they call themselves, and their various leaders who are very anti-Africans, so many people, including Africans, so many Black people. So they use that to make fun of us, which, yeah, it's very interesting. But the image that they were using was children scavenging for bananas and things in the trash and all those kind of places. So it's very I wouldn't deny that just on a day-to-day basis I don't interact with people like that. So so it doesn't disturb me. I don't know if I did, but I'm back probably. I mean, the only way I would is work when I didn't disturb me either. So but it's just over, you'd see all these things are just like you're talking about ants, and people have been reduced to nothingness. Nothingness to I think to follow last words to meaning of nothingness. We are such a meaning of nothingness. I think it would come close if you're arguing about so many things in this world. So maybe, you know, you talk about maybe the existence of God and all these kind of things. So, nothing from something. But anyway, you're talking about nothingness, nothing, just human beings existing as nothing. It's just the vast majority of people in Nigeria. But yeah, that is. And we see the politicians doing and other people doing, some complaining and just.
But you know, yeah, before we get to politicians, you know what makes a situation particularly dire for me is the fact that for the vast majority of Nigerians, right, it is still a cash reality. These are people who deal exclusively in cash. They don't have enough resources to open bank accounts. They cannot afford the fees. A lot of them don't even have the wherewithal in terms of social skills to open bank accounts. So these are people who, in a sense, not just in a sense, who fundamentally live on the margins of society. And so for them, a big chunk of the income that they get is from relatives who are doing better than they are, right? And we know that that's in the absence of the kind of formal social security and other welfare networks that are available in the USA, in Canada, and in much of Europe, that this is really our own version, if you like, of the social network, right? The social safety mechanisms that people depend on, rich neighbors, rich relatives, and so on, for their fundamental needs, for food, for clothing, for medicine, for school fees for their children, right? And so when these people who are their source are unable to get more than 5,000 naira, and it's now difficult for people to cook, for a family of three or four to cook with 5,000 naira and feed themselves, see. So when the givers cannot, they have money in the banks, they have the full intention of helping out, but the banks simply have no money. And part of the crisis, from what I understand, is an extension of the basic criminal idiocy of the ruling class in Nigeria. As you know, the former administration president, Muhammadu Buhari, came up with this harebrained idea that they needed to redesign the Nigerian currency, which was not a redesign. They simply changed the color, you see. And when they were doing this, nobody could see the currency. And yet the government set an arbitrary date to end the circulation of the old currency. The ostensible goal was to strip certain politicians who have stockpiled the old currency to buy up the elections, to deny them of access to cash to buy the elections. Well, what happened was that the poor people suffered. Now, ultimately, the courts decided that the two currencies, same currency, but two designs, should continue to be legal tender till the end of this year, to the end of December. But the Tinubu administration has been unable to finish the transition to the new design of the currency. Meanwhile, the government has said that indefinitely for now, the two designs should continue to be legal tender. But people don't believe it. So a lot of traders, I understand, a lot of business people are hoarding the cash because they don't know if they put the money in the bank, whether they're going to lose it or whether they're going to be able to have access to it. So they are keeping their cash, you know, and they are keeping mostly the new currency. And that has created this mess. So the inability of the government to think ahead, okay? And it just, I don't know what you think, but for me, it goes to say that the most basic things we feel are the most basic things in Nigeria, because it takes somebody to think on a daily basis to say, what is going to come up in 100 days? What is going to come up in 30 days? What is going to come up in a week? The Nigerian leaders just wake up only when the crisis is already there, it's arrived. Nobody has thought through to avert a crisis that is oncoming.
Yeah. Well, it's I just simply put it like this. I think if you get to real places, and I say places, you go to thinking societies like you're talking about, thinking places, people are actually thinking of things for better or worse. I don't feel in Nigeria we are, including myself, as much as you can, but we are. And I think largely it's some sort of for the rest of us, you can sit down and you can see what the problem is, the system, the structure, and all these things. The rest of it is just entertainment, maybe mental masturbation. I just see what the problem is. You can see there are no institutions, there are no structures, it's zero sum game from top to bottom. The average Nigerian, the average, I can give you stories of family members who we see everything as is zero sum game as well. And if you don't understand what zero sum game means, it just essentially means one person can succeed on me. And most times is that person looking at you, why are you succeeding? And that's a mentality we carry even into America. I dropped off a friend at the airport, and we had a very nice, very, very good friend, very nice person. We had a conversation, and she's the one thing she always does is typically pro-life in terms of this thing. But the economic policies and the social structures that we think of in my like a lot of Nigerians are probably more on the it depends on but they're probably siding more with certain policies that will be much with like Democrats overall, right, in America, not to get very political. But I was and one of the things she said, for instance, is she was talking about, oh, women have play, black women have play outcomes in America. And I said, the problem we have in Nigeria is that we come here, and we're never trained to think of facts. I don't use the term think for ourselves. I know that's a very loaded and very weird term. I know what that means. You think for yourself, whatever. But to go through the facts, and I said, here's why I'm saying this to you. We in Nigeria, and we have this state where we're going to sit down, just like we're sitting there, people and beer parlors complaining. This time, a lot of these people, this is why I sit there, these people are complaining. If you had an opportunity to change things tomorrow, they would still want to go down the same way that they're going down right now. Any opportunity, whether you say you want to keep the system and you want to have elections, whether you say you want to, a lot of these guys, you want to go down. And I said, look, somebody parodying this thing, I tell you that black women have outcomes. And they are parodying to you, telling you that it's because you have fewer black professionals statistically in this thing. I said, look, in every society, every ethnic group, every society, some people will be good at certain things and others will, So if you're saying that, you feel like black people have bad outcomes, why is it that these black people don't need to go to any black country to go and deliver their children? Why is it that if you go to a country like Nigeria, 99.9% of the pregnant women, given the opportunity, will not think twice and come and deliver in America? How logically can you reconcile those two facts with what you're saying and what you? And she was dumbfounded. Like, whoa. And I say this not to say I'm taking out a friend dropping on the way to this guy. So you're going to carry that now to go bang out with your family, but you wouldn't go to Nigeria. It's the same way we all sit down, we see the way things are. You have people and resources day to day, your friends, your colleagues, your relatives, people in the village, people in this thing, left, right, and center, will be the same people that will fight to entrench the system that is going to impoverish them. And if some of them feel like, oh, if they get proximity to power, it'll be fine. And for some, it will be. But statistically, the amount of people that have proximity to power that will be able to be wealthy is the pure definition of a zero-sum game.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do not create economic activity in Nigeria largely. To the extent that we do, it's beer parlors and hotels. Somebody, like I said, tell you that outside beer parlors, of
hotel, transportation.
That's it, because you have to go to the beer parlor and go take a look at economic activities in two big places, Lagos and Abuja. And then you go to other states, it's essentially that. And you say, okay, the ones that don't drink beer and other places that don't drink beer, yeah, they still go outside to sit down and hang out in similar-like circumstances. We are not in the business of trying to even say we want to emulate tourist destinations, like, for instance, in Dubai, in Miami, in Singapore, in Thailand. We're not trying to do that. Not trying to create a game, or trying to create a zero-sum game, and that's the that's what. And then we all sit down and look at what we don't want. And this is the whole title to what that means. We are seeing exactly where we are headed. We are seeing the biggest problem to why it's that way. And if you refuse to reconcile that, just sit down and expect. I know, again, in a zero-sum game, maybe I live in Nigeria, I have almost everybody tell me, they do this, they do that, they do this. You're not tied to the government in one way, shape, or form. So if you're tied to the government, if you have this firm that's an architectural firm, you're making many choices, or you're deep into politics, you've kind of, you're not tied to the kick. So it's a statistical kick, right? It's a finite kick, and it's very small. So you grab your input for yourself.
Yeah.
And you look like you're fine, but you're not creating wealth. Nigerians don't understand the concept that wealth and prosperity, especially if you believe in the tenets of capitalism, which even communist countries have as well.
That are created. It's like something that a friend said to me a long time ago. He said, if you take, Nigerians have this way, if somebody becomes a government official and steals, embezzles public resources, people start saying, oh, this man has made money. You see, this man has made money. But they don't know that the man has not made money. The man is making stealing, is what you are doing, right? Because to make money, you almost literally make money, you produce it, right? So you take some amount of money, you invest it in something productive, either a good or service, an idea. Like Zuckerberg took an idea, Facebook, as a way that people can interact, and it became a billionaire. Okay. Some other people become billionaires by creating products. But Nigerians become millionaires and billionaires by just taking money that's produced by the state, generated by the state through oil revenue. They just get a portion of it. They sit on it. And what we're good at, what we're agile at, is the art of conspicuous consumption. And so we mistake somebody buying 20 cars that he or she doesn't need, somebody building a mansion of 30 rooms when he has a family of four, and it's not like he's generous and he's going to invite his friends to come and always stay in the rooms. No, it's just conspicuous consumption to create a spectacle of wealth, which becomes a way of creating the illusion of wealth, because you don't have wealth, right? A lot of them still today, they set up a 30-room mansion, and then they put in state-of-the-art furniture in them. And when the furniture, goes into disrepair, by then, maybe 10 years down the line, they don't have the resources to replace it. So they don't have money, really. And so the example that this person gave is that if you take the typical Nigerian politician and you give the politician $200 million. And you say to the politician, okay, you're not to steal any money. We're going to give you 5 years. In 5 years, we want you to make this $200 million that you have generate $10,000. You can't do it by just putting it in the bank and earning interest. You have to put it into some economic activity. They have no idea how to do it. If you say to them, here's $200 million, spend it. Oh, they could spend it in an hour or less. They could buy private jets, buy cars that they didn't need, buy a yacht, and so on and so forth. But to produce, let me put this money to work, other than through depositing the money in a bank and earning an interest, but let me put it to some economic activity that will generate $10,000 in 5 years. They wouldn't know how to do it. Okay? Unless somebody will just take it as a take some of it as a loan and then pay them 10,000 naira dollars in interest. So what you have is a group that is not productive, running a nation, stealing the resources of the nation. And when they steal the resources, it's wasted because their mindset is outside oriented. So they go to South Africa, they come to America, they go to Canada, they go to France, Germany, and they buy property where they spend at best a few weeks in the year, they and their families, right? So they bought property that is not useful to them, and yet they're paying property tax to the governments where they purchase this real estate and so on. And so we have the country that we have, which year after year after year, when you ask governors or presidents about their achievement in Nigeria, people are still talking about I built roads, without understanding the shame that that brings to us as a people. That there is no place where a serious leader says, my achievement is to build roads. You and I know that in a place like America, every year roads are resurfaced, every year, because once you pass the rainfall season, the snow season, the roads are scraped, there are little potholes, they resurface the roads, and it creates jobs, it keeps your cars running, and so on. But to return to sort of this grim situation that we have where there is very little money in circulation in the country. I was just thinking of it in terms of the absolute idiocy that is also playing out. So you find the ostensible leaders in Nigeria, like the 27 legislators in Rivers State, who en masse decamped from the PDP to the APC, ruling APC, because, of course, former governor Nyesom Wike is at war with the current governor. And these legislators must have reasoned that Wike's access to federal power and therefore his capacity for creating mayhem, not for creating any public good, but for causing crisis, producing crisis. And that's one thing our politicians are productive at. They produce crisis at a pin drop. Okay. They could create an earthquake. What of crisis? They could create a crisis that will claim hundreds and hundreds of lives. So you will think ordinarily that in a country like Nigeria, with the myriad of problems that we have, that our legislators, our politicians, our political leaders will spend their time, right, thinking about the existential crisis in which their fellow citizens are entrapped, looking for solutions, instead of which they are always singularly obsessed with their self-interest. So you find the absurdity of 27 members of a political party who have no ideological reason, but everyone has a personal, primitive reason to dump the party on whose ticket they were quote unquote elected, even though we all know, you and I know, that maybe more than half of them were not properly elected. Perhaps even a lot more than half of them, were not properly elected. But that people would do that sort of thing and get away with it when people are facing the kind of crisis that they are facing in Nigeria. For me, it riles me up, let's say. I don't know how you respond to all of that.
I think my biggest thing is it's interesting to see a fresh amount of responses to it. I think anything spectacular is just very interesting. I haven't taken a look at people's responses. I typically would at the end of the semester, so I'm busy. It typically cracks me up. But some people don't know, which is government of the state.
He said was.
Which is, sorry, which was the out was the prior governor of River State. Just for a quick summary, River State is the second most financially viable state, depends on where you put it between them and Delta State, all arbitrarily created by the military, that six states and one federal capital. So you have so many states are juggernauts because they have a little bit more of the whole system. But in advance of that, in my humble opinion, I think the state should have 100% of the whole, by the way. Whatever is in should be left to you, in my opinion. And you can have a structure where you marry and tax them. For, I mean, necessarily for you, you don't have to tax them either. So, actually, is system. So the way politics works in Nigeria, just to be so for those who understand, it matters who's the governors, who are the governors of the states that have the largest financial muscle. Because that's where the money would largely come from to rig. At this point, I don't even know, is it anymore again? That's where the money comes from to declare the winners of the elections, whatever you choose to call it, I leave for those who are to label this. Yeah, we don't need elections every to be selected overall. Some people are popularly elected, popularly declared winners. They have votes, and then they are declared winners. But largely, everything is just this thing. So the money base matters, especially as for national elections, matters for senators and presidents, especially. The governor might be less interested. The money base doesn't matter as much for local elections because the governor just declares whoever he or she wants. Mostly he is, but he or she wants. Doesn't really matter. Governor can go on and do. Doesn't matter. A lot of things matter. See, if you to understand this context, there's people who understand it. It was a major distance in holding up the PAP, the last, all the same parties, to be honest. But it's been a major club, because a major club in keeping one party alive. He wasn't happy with them because he wanted to be declared president, which he came out and lied about, misled people about. At least we can prove from these videos, right? And he made sure that he extracted his pound, he extracted his pound of flesh from this, he felt around him. Yeah, that's him. That's his words. And he made sure that the person that they declared this thing was declared this thing that he was going to, he was in charge of rigging the elections there in other states, which is a financial muscle. And part of that grand bargain was he would get a portfolio he wanted as minister, which turns out to be FCT minister. The other people didn't compensate in such. Charlie Peter Obi would not entertain it, much less this thing. So he got what he wanted. Now, the thing about Nigeria is that, as useless as the system is, it's very hard for somebody to perpetuate themselves in parliament. Possible. Till was done by Lagos. Lagos is a different case, which let's not go on a tangent as to why Lagos is easier to attainable to perpetrate, who is not from Lagos, almost none of the governors, except for maybe anybody from Lagos. governors and deputies. I think Femi Pedro had some Lagos pedigree, but Tinubu got rid of him. And then, you know, putting the Yoruba mandate in Lagos, because MJ is not from Lagos. So he told it himself is to claim that. It's a whole different tangent. So now, matters in terms of okay, how did the state's governance matter? Tinubu got that. This guy got his grand building, gets to Abuja as a city minister. Now, a city minister is an influential position somewhat, but in the grand scheme of things, for a power base, you're not the person that declares a large amount of political people. You're not the one. Governors and the presidents are the ones that do that. As another person, but in terms of power itself, you're a governor, you're the president. FCT, you're not being trying much. You're still a minister at the end of the day. So that's where the basis. Wike has refused to let go of this thing. Contrary to, if you go to Twitter and Google Wike and all the things he has said, contrary to what he says, what he has said, is always the case with Wike. He says stuff that he actually went around in his last 4 years with the band every day. When he says he will sit down, the band will start playing, he starts dancing. You know, I think there's a sadistic entertainment element about Wike. You know, so that's where Wike is at. So now Wike is now fighting the guy he installed as governor. Even though he said that such an installation, as he was installed by the previous guy, Amechi. He fought the previous guy. So Wike has 27 of the 33 members of the unit chamber, meaning one chamber, House of Assembly, another bizarre creation. That's a very different engine. And he made them attempt and change parties to feel that they were going to impeach the governor. The governor retaliates. He gets bulldozers and goes to bulldoze the House of Assembly complex. All this is playing out publicly. This is not something short thing, right? The governor retaliates. Then he presents his budget to four members of the House who have nominated the House Speaker, locking out the weakest 27 people and two people that I don't know whether they're either here or there. I don't really know what they are. And then news are there to make Wike happy birthday on Twitter. You know? It's spectacular. But it's most people do not pay attention. I saw this happen, and I remember Zadie remember the story up until people reminded us no story on Twitter as well. That thing, it also involved a relative of mine. Then very similar circumstances. Godfather, he brings in this guy that had been in America for a couple of years. Who's another one watching my weekend in the morning? Who you might know, playing the game by IG as well. You don't understand, Chinarity is a very vicious, he can write 50 paragraphs, you know. So, this guy gets in. We begins to control the laws of government, it was a fail.
Governor.
In the civilian, so they had, I think it was 21 members of the House. I think Wobu had 17 of them. 17 or 19, I can't remember. 20, I think 17. He had 17. Wike is only 6 people on Fubaru's side. There's also the ethnic component to the Wike thing, but I didn't even want to bring him there. Because at least, thankfully, you know, even though Wike is ethnically evil, I think your ethnic group is objective, not subjective. Wike has denied that. So, you know, let him and his states figure themselves out. Let them believe it was happening. And first, they had the people be dragging the Igbos there, some of the clans there. But anyway, you know, cleansing and immediately says it's creating existing Abraham family and pursues Udo starts flying his 917 Slitos in a private jet with police from Abuja to go and impeach Chimamanda. Chimamanda kills people, left their house, left the place, and left their own speaker. And then declared all the seats vacant. Same thing, they declared all the seats vacant. And there's no going to be elections. Mm-hmm. But those seats are vacant for whatever reason they've been made up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 17 filed a petition to the chief judge, which the state constitution states that once you file a petition, it goes to the chief judge. The chief judge has to make a 7-man investigative panel to investigate the governor.
Mm-hmm.
The chief judge at that point in time was my mayor. went along with Chimariki, and the rest is history. Became largely irrelevant about social so. It's still in PAP, I think she might case with my the APC, but that's the reason. So this is the to tell you just how we move to down the democracy. I bet you can see it's just a feudal system of operations. Let's put it that way.
I would actually think that to call it feudal is to give it credit. Is because feudal still has a structure, it still has its order, it has its lineaments of a kind of domain, political domain that has its rules, right? I think that Nigeria is simply the best way to describe it is this. And this will be to libel animals, to call Nigerians an animal kingdom, you know, where just the strongest animal could just kill a weaker one for his meal, and there's no sanction, there's no consequence, there are no repercussions, you know. The fact that, for example, if you look at Anambra State, which used to be the laboratory for every kind of absurdity in Nigeria, that an ordinary man who had connections to the presidency, specifically the Obasanjo presidency, went and marshaled the police from the Southeastern Command in Umuahia, and went and abducted a governor at the time, a governor that the PDP, the ruling party, had imposed on Anambra State at the time, and forced him at gunpoint to issue his letter of resignation, and they went and compelled the legislature to accept that letter, that fraudulent letter of resignation, and to then swear in the deputy governor, and that he took the vice president, who was reached by the beleaguered governor, to reverse all of this and to order the assistant inspector general of police, Rafige was his name, who had led this operation from Omar here, to go and retrieve the letter of resignation that the governor had been forced to issue, and to return the governor to his office. And then, as if this wasn't absurd enough, egregious enough, thugs who were in 50-something trucks swept through Anambra State over a 3-day period, escorted by the police as they set fire to government establishments, government vehicles, any government property they chanced upon. Okay? In the flue glare full glare of the public, you know, captured on television, the police leading arsonists on a spree of destruction, you know. And the country has got worse, you know. We haven't talked about it in a sense because it's unspeakable what happened in the Imo State governorship election. Okay, where Hope Uzodinma invoking what he said was lessons from Tinubu, basically nullified elections in his state. Okay, and you found the absurdity that there were polling units where one person was accredited, but Hope Uzodinma got hundreds of votes. You know, so we have actually regressed so profoundly that people have become so cynical. I'm sure you've been following what happened in Kano State, right? Where a court of appeal had removed a governor. And then they were asked to offer the signed copy of their judgment. And the signed copy of the judgment they ruled they sub they gave turned out that they ruled for the same governor that they had removed. And when that absurdity was pointed out, they said, oh, it's a typographical error. So obviously they wrote one judgment. Somebody went to them with money. They gave him the judgment. Maybe they asked him, write a judgment, and we'll read it. And they read it. But when they were asked to give the judgment that they read, because they don't think, everybody's mind is set on the money we're going to get. So once they get that money, they take a leave, absolute leave of their senses. So he said to them, give us your judgment. They actually gave the right judgment. And but the surprising thing is that we have become so at peace as Nigerians, so habituated to this animal kingdom. And I say it with all apologies to animals that I'm defaming them, you see. Yeah. But we've become so habituated to this that people just go to bed as if this is normal. Okay? And so you see, as we're speaking, you and I today, about the enormity of suffering that is facing people as Christmas fast approaches. The president of the Senate, former Governor Godswill Akpabio, stages an obscene, repulsive jamboree at a stadium in his home state. Okay, Akwa Ibom, to celebrate his 61st birthday. 61st birthday is not even an important landmark. People celebrate maybe 60, celebrate 70, perhaps even 65. But 61st birthday, a stadium was filled. He showed up wearing his agbada, surrounded by the accoutrement of power, you know, secret agents and so on, and is jogging and waving to a crowd that, of course, had been rented and brought in there. These are people who are suffering. And this misbegotten Senate president goes to mock their suffering in a very demented appeal to populism, you know, that, oh, you know, I'm a popular leader. No, you're not popular. Okay, without those security people surrounding you, you can't wander into the streets where the people in the stadium live without them lynching you. You can't. And he knows it. And all the idiots who are wrecking Nigeria know this. And all the idiots, you know, I mean, and then you look at Asare Dokubo, who just months ago was making again a particular theater of himself, you know, mocking people, saying that whether we like it or not, Tinubu is here as a president, Jagaban, Jagaban. Now he's all complaining. Obviously complaining because he'd not got what he expected that he was going to get from the dispensation. And so, unfortunately, even though he's speaking in the name of this is the worst government for the Ijaw people, no, it's the worst government for you. Okay? Of course, Tinubu is a terrible, terrible president for everybody, including Yoruba people. And that should be underscored. You know, when you have a disastrous leader, he's a disaster for everybody. So he's not a disaster for Ijaw people. He's not a disaster for Igbo people. He's not a disaster for Hausa, Fulani, or Efik, or Fufulde, or whatever. He's a disaster for every Nigerian. And this man, Asare Dokubo, who lent his capacity for violence to Tinubu in order to rig the elections, should please not insult Nigerians by coming out to crow his misery.
Mm. Yeah, they were all expecting your payouts, but if you understand where economies work, you know that it's not a good way to get paid. I mean, some people will get paid that way, don't get me wrong. It's just so much stress to get paid by how much. To get paid, it's too much. Maybe some people make millions of it. I thought they'll get paid. They came out, scapegoated people, talked all this stuff. And I didn't know that. I don't even know that. Maybe all these games, that maybe it's a whole story on his own. It's just even. A guy that should be in prison, even by Nigerian standards. He's throwing all the money from NDDC, did the same as governor. Did a few things here and there, but largely was just literally signing checks to himself. And then just like Tinubu, they were on the same EFCC thing in terms of governors that needed to be in prison. And so many things happened. Nobody was... I just don't know. That's just defined like really bad. It used to be Abakari. Speaking of which, Abakari probably is going to like in Dubai somewhere. Who knows? I should be in Nigerian prisons. Anybody who has broken the laws deserves to be in prison in Nigeria. I mean it as a joke, but I also mean it as a very serious thing. Like, we have no rights to put people in prison. We just don't. It doesn't make any sense. We just can't. If you keep in prison in Nigeria, our people are imminent, continuous harm to other people in society. Meaning they are likely to kill people. Mm-hmm. Once they get out. It's all right.
Nigeria should not have a prison system. Because you have a case where the judges who are sending people to jail are worse criminals than the people they are jailing. The prosecutors, the police. I don't know if you read the story, Moyo Okediji, who is a professor of art, one of our finest art historians and artists at the University of Texas, Austin. I actually shared his story on Facebook today. Let me quickly read to you part of that story, because it's a very moving story. Let me see if I can pick it up. Basically, he went to Nigeria, but he decided to go through the border, and the police. So this is a story of how he was robbed of 500. So I'll read a little bit of it. Right, he says he titled this Igbo Kwenu. He says, without the intervention of a crowd of young Igbo men who saved me from the claws of the Nigeria police attached to the Festac Mile 2 station, I would be a dead man today. I arrived Lagos today, he wrote. I came in through Ghana. and decided to enter Nigeria by road so I could see the lagoon landscape, riding a jeep that I hired to drive me down. Everything went well in Ghana, Togo, Benin Republic, until I stepped into Nigeria. Now, dear trouble started. The first immigration checkpoint that we encountered was at the Seme border on the Nigeria side. One of the immigration officers took a look at me and said, "Come down, Oga." To cut a long story short, they robbed me of $500. There were many of them, and they invited me, more like dragged me, to their shed. They took my hand luggage with all the money that I brought from the U.S. Their excuse was that they wanted to search it to see if it contained contraband. They asked for my Nigeria passport. I told them that it had expired and I was in Nigeria to renew it. They said it was an offense for me to enter the country with an expired passport. I apologized, but they wanted none of that. They said I had to, quote, settle them. They had my wallet containing the money I brought to spend in Nigeria. They saw $200 notes and said I needed to give them these notes. Otherwise, they would seize all the money in the wallet and take me to their office to make a statement. I had heard stories of visitors in the country ending up dead when the police invited them to their offices to clear some issues. So I eagerly gave them the $40. They gave me back my things. But when I counted my money later, $500 was missing. Jeez. Then the jeep driver drove me to the Festac Mile 2 motor park, where another driver I hired to take me to Ile Ife was waiting. My two suitcases were on the floor at the Mile 2 Festac car park in public, right under the large gate to Festac. I was narrating my ordeal in the hands of the immigration to my driver when three gun-toting police officers arrived. They carried some deadly-looking AK-47. They wanted to see the content of my bags. As they searched the bags, they came upon the money I brought from the U.S. I introduced myself to them as a professor at the University of Texas, Austin. They asked for identifications. I gave them my driving license, the university-issued ID card, my U.S. passport, and my Nigeria passport. They took them from me. By that time, about 10 police officers had descended upon me. Also listening were some Igbo guys hanging out at the motor park. Before you could say Kilo Day, the police officer searched me thoroughly. Then they started searching my bag. They found that my suitcase contained my personal effects. They were interested in a pair of shorts, which they said looked like camouflage shorts. They pulled out the shorts. Then there was a sculpture that I made, which they said was juju. They decided to seize my suitcases, hand luggage, ID card, and all of my money. They said I had to follow them to the police station. At this point, a sizable crowd of some 50 people had gathered. One of them, with an obvious Igbo accent, said, "You can see he's a professor from abroad. He has given you several ID cards, including his passport, which you will find again." It was like a signal to the others, who began shouting, "You won't kill him. You people are thieves, so highway robbers. It can never happen. When I don't see money, when our eyes don't open. Before you can take him, just kill all of us." They formed a tight buffer zone between the police officers and me. Two of them jumped into the police vehicle and dragged out my bags from the vehicle. They accosted the one who held the wallet containing my ID card and my money, shouting, "You better give him back his wallet and money now, otherwise Wahala will bust." Another said, "We will not let you take him to the police station to kill him like you always kill international visitors." In a matter of moments, about 100 Igbo boys emerged from thin air and surrounded us. The police officer saw they were clearly outnumbered by these Igbo motorpark boys. They threatened to shoot. These Igbo boys stood their ground, daring the police officers to kill them. "Oya now," they said, "Shebi, you get AK-47. Kill us now and then you can take him. But you are not going to take him if we are still alive." Though some of the police officers appeared to cock their rifles, the Igbo guys only squeezed tighter around me. The police officers slapped some of the Igbo boys near them, but their ring of protection around me did not break. It only got tighter as the guys were yelling and daring the officers to kill them. I was scared. The police officers realized that the situation was clearly beyond what they envisaged. They had imagined I was alone and nobody would rise to my defense. The police officer who held my wallet, passports, and ID cards quickly handed them back to me, looking nervous. The Igbo boys chanting carried my suitcases on their heads, sometimes lifting the boxes up above their heads like heavily coveted trophies. The boys seemingly closed in on the police officers, ready to attack them for my protection. The police officers jumped inside their vehicles and drove off to save face, their tails curled behind their brocos. I recall the traumatic moment I left the country in 1992 and swore, if you see me in this godforsaken country again, cut off my neck. Obviously, the country has fallen much lower since then and is now a danger zone in which men in uniforms of all descriptions, immigration, customs, police vehicle inspection officers, and others wearing uniforms difficult to identify or define. They have all taken over the country and made it difficult for citizens to enjoy or even just subsist in their own country. Which kind nsobu bide so? It is a geographical zone best avoided if you can. But for the intervention of these Igbo boys, I could be locked up in a cell at the Mayatou Festa police station office now, or dead and my body disposed of. Someone needs to do something, somehow, if they want to save the citizens of Nigeria from law enforcement officers paid to protect their lives, the lives of the people, but jeopardizing the very existence of the citizens they took on oath to assist. God bless these Igbo boys who rescued me from the hands of the obnoxious police officers at the Mayatou Festa today. I'm sure not all police officers are bad, but those police officers at the Mayatou Festa station who attacked me for daring to return to Nigeria on a visit were evil and worse than maggots. Me, I will pack my stuff and flee to Ghana tomorrow.
Mm.
Okay? So this is what I wrote in sharing the story. I said, please find time to read the post below by Moyo Okediji, an amazingly talented artist and an art historian. He details his terrifying ordeal at the hands of Nigerian law enforcement and how he narrowly escaped with his life after some Igbo youth intervened. I've often said that Nigeria's uniform officers are often the worst of criminals. His harrowing experience bears that out. Read and share. You know, so when he comes back, we'll interview him. In fact, when I went to Austin, Texas, about in 2016, to participate in the Texas Book Festival, he was the one who moderated my conversation, and he's a fine fellow. So it was frightening to see him go through this kind of experience, but it's an all too common story. So he survived. He survived. And stories like this, Emeka, really give me hope. Okay? Because the Igbo guys who saved his life could have said, okay, he's Yoruba, let them kill him, right? But the Nigerians like this believe in the country. They want a better country. They want a police force that is not as corrupt and as venal as what we have. And so they rallied around a man they didn't know, a man who happens to be Yoruba, to save his life. And to his credit, he underscored it, he underlined it, and he gave them tribute. That's a beautiful, on a day like this, when we were discussing a particularly dismal situation in our country, this kind of story both frightens but also gives me hope. Yeah. So I don't know, I think you should have the last word on this subject.
I mean, at the very least, they believe in humanity, right? They don't believe in, as most normal regular people should, but Nigeria is a very interesting place. It's not something you'd always find. So they believe in humanity, they believe in... if you believe in humanity to some degree, when you have others, it also harms your own humanity to me. It diminishes, like one of the famous philosophers would have said, you know, diminishes this thing, brings you and not just others closer to a malformed thing, not even an animal, right? They believe in humanity, they did the right thing. It's not common. I mean, you could also make an argument, really did the right thing, then you'll get money from him, but he didn't make that argument. Mm-hmm. So It's not that fair to make that argument because that's what you might expect in Nigeria. But there are people who generally in Nigeria just, at least maybe for lack of opportunity to steal, I don't know. I think just assume that these guys are just people and there are people like that who believe in the cause, in something bigger than themselves. So it seems like it's put it that way.
No, you know, I mean, they sort of to echo what you said, the great poet John Donne wrote in his poem, you know, every man's debt diminishes me, for I'm involved in humanity. You know, and said, so he said, so do not send to ask for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. You know, so the fortunes of every human, whether the human is a Muslim or an atheist or, you know, a Pentecostal Christian or a Catholic, whether the person is ethnic or Igbo or whatever ethnic group, we should participate in and celebrate our shared humanity. Part of the crisis we have in Nigeria is this, again, you said it splendidly, this zero-sum game that for me, as a Yoruba person to succeed, I want Igbo people to fail, I want Hausa people to fail, I want Isekiri people to fail, you know, I want Christians to fail because I'm a Muslim, so I want only Muslims to succeed, or in my family, I want to be the only one doing well, you know, so let everybody else fail so I can show them muscle in my town, I want to be one of those who will oppress other people. So that sense is also why we're not creating the world that we can create. Because the idiots running Nigeria, from the president down, okay, what they fail to know is that when you create wealth and you lift up more people out of poverty, that's the greatest security you have. Then we wouldn't have to live in prisons, you know, because you find Nigerians, they build mansions, right? But then they build prison walls around their mansions, right? And they buy bulletproof cars and they put security on their gates and so on. They are scared of their own shadows. But in a country where people are doing well, where a graduate has a job that can pay his basic bill, nobody, very few people are going to have the incentive to go and carry a gun and start looking for you, right? I mean, in America, you and I can get in a car at midnight and drive to Washington, D.C., which I do whenever I go to Washington, D.C. I like to leave like at midnight or 1 a.m., so I'll be arriving in the morning. And there's absolutely no fear. If I'm hungry, I stop at a stop stay at a rest place, and you have food, you eat food, you gas up your car, and you go. Mm. You know, because it's a different system. People don't have the incentive. People are not desperate, you know, to commit crimes in order to leave. Anyway, so I don't know.
Okay. Last time I went to DC, I was about a month ago. I went for a wedding. Remember, we just about a month ago. I went for a wedding and at the wedding I was going to chill, I guess. I ended up waking up at left at 10, but even a station in DC was the same thing. At the time I was serving in DC and Fort Meade. But I woke up, I left at about 2 a.m. Time change. I left at 2 a.m. I left at 3 a.m. So after the time change.
Yeah.
And then I was back here before 7.
Yeah.
I was back here and enjoyed my trip that way. I just, that's something you would even contemplate in Nigeria.
Yeah.
If you can do that, if you try that, sharing with the private car again. I remember back even 20 years ago, they used to, the buses used to carry police escorts.
Yeah, in Nigeria. Absolutely. I used to take night buses in Nigeria.
I can't imagine now.
I don't think it happens now. All right, my friend, take us home from this episode.
Right, so it's been a great episode. I guess we're a little bit from one thing to the next, but generally in terms of what has been happening as Christmas approaches and how people are faring and how things have been happening. And we appreciate everybody that listens, everybody that gives feedback, messages, even. Some people write actual like multi-paragraph responses sometimes, so I appreciate all that.
Yes.
And we look forward to the next episode.
Thank you and good night.
All right.